A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
A lot of people hear the word Apache and think web server, that piece of software that quietly served half the internet in the late 90s. And that was true for a while. But Daniel's been looking at the modern stack and noticed something stranger. Kafka, Spark, Hadoop, Airflow, Cassandra, Flink, Maven. They all carry the same name. So his question is basically, what happened? How did a project built around maintaining a web server evolve into an institution that now stewards over 300 technologies? What's the Apache ecosystem? How does a project actually get in? What does the foundation provide? And why have so many foundational pieces of infrastructure ended up under its umbrella? And then the bigger question underneath all of that, how did a volunteer-driven nonprofit become responsible for such an extraordinary amount of the invisible plumbing that modern computing depends on?
The answer starts with a patch. 1995. The dominant web server at the time was something called NCSA HTTPD, developed at the National Center for Supercomputing Applications, same place Mosaic came from, actually. But the main developer, Rob McCool, had left, and the software was essentially abandoned. So a group of webmasters who were running it started emailing each other patches, little fixes, improvements. They called themselves the Apache Group, and the name is a pun, Apache Server. Not the tribe, not the helicopter, just a bunch of patches.
That's the nerdiest possible origin for a name that now appears on half the infrastructure software on the planet.
It's perfect, though. It tells you exactly what the thing was. And by 1999, this loose group of patch sharers had grown enough that they needed something more formal. They incorporated the Apache Software Foundation as a nonprofit. The stated reason was to hold assets and provide legal protection. If someone sued over the code, individual volunteers weren't personally exposed. But the deeper thing they were doing was creating an institutional container for a particular way of building software.
And that container is what we're really talking about. Because the web server is still around, HTTPD is still an Apache project, but the foundation now oversees more than 320 projects. The list is genuinely staggering when you lay it out. Kafka, which handles real-time data, streaming for something like 80% of the Fortune 100. Spark, the analytics engine that came out of UC Berkeley's AMP lab. Hadoop, the distributed storage and processing framework that basically invented the big data era, donated by Yahoo, Airflow for workflow orchestration, Cassandra for distributed databases, Flink for stream processing, Maven for build automation, Tomcat for Java servlets. And those are just the ones people have heard of.
And here's the thing about that list. None of them are web servers. The Apache ecosystem sprawled into categories that didn't even exist when the foundation was created. So the question Daniel's asking about how projects get in and what the foundation provides, that's the mechanism that enabled this whole diversification.
So walk me through it. I'm a company or a university lab. I've built something useful, and I want to donate it. What actually happens?
It starts with a proposal to something called the Apache Incubator, and this is where the foundation's philosophy becomes really concrete. The incubator doesn't primarily evaluate your code. It evaluates whether you have a community. The principle is community over code. A healthy, diverse group of contributors matters more than elegant software, because code can be improved, but a dysfunctional community will eventually kill anything.
Which is the opposite of how most organizations evaluate software projects.
Completely. A company evaluating whether to adopt a tool looks at features, performance, security. The incubator looks at whether there are multiple people from multiple organizations who care enough to keep working on it after the initial excitement fades. They want to see that no single company controls the committer list. They want to see decisions being made on public mailing lists, not in private Slack channels. They want consensus-based decision-making, not a benevolent dictator, not a corporate roadmap handed down from above.
And this is the famous Apache way.
Right. meritocracy, open communication, consensus. And I should say, the word meritocracy has baggage, and the Foundation has acknowledged that. They've shifted the language somewhat in recent years, talking more about community-led development. But the operational principle is the same. The people who do the work earn the trust, and that trust is demonstrated in public so anyone can see how decisions were reached.
So a project enters the incubator, gets assigned mentors who are experienced Apache people, and then what? They have to prove themselves over time.
The mentors check that the project's license is compatible. Everything has to be under the Apache License 2.0, which is this permissive, business-friendly license that lets companies use the code in proprietary products without forcing them to open source their own editions. They check that there are no trademark conflicts. They check that the code doesn't have dependencies with incompatible licenses. And then they watch. Does the project actually make decisions on the mailing list? Do they bring in new committers from outside the original team? When there's a disagreement, does it get resolved constructively, or does it turn into a flame war that drives people away?
How long does that take?
It varies wildly. Some projects graduate in months. Some spend years in the incubator. Some never graduate at all. They just fizzle out. Or the mentors determine the community isn't forming, and the project gets retired. The Foundation publishes graduation reports that are surprisingly candid about what went wrong when a project doesn't make it.
And once something graduates, it becomes a top-level project with its own project management committee, a PMC, and its own committers. The Foundation itself stays out of the technical decisions entirely.
That's the crucial architectural choice. The ASF is a tiny organization. The last annual report I saw, we're talking maybe a few dozen paid staff, mostly handling operations, fundraising, infrastructure. The Foundation doesn't employ developers. It doesn't set roadmaps. It provides a legal and operational umbrella. And each of the 300-plus projects governs itself. The PMC can vote in new committers, can decide to release a new version, can resolve disputes. The Foundation's job is to make sure the brand isn't being misused, the trademarks are protected, the servers stay up.
So, what does a project actually get? Concrete things.
Legal protection is the big one. If you're a contributor to an Apache project, you're covered by the Foundation's legal entity. Someone sues over a patent claim in the code, they sue the Foundation, not you personally. That matters enormously for individual volunteers who can't afford a patent defense. Second, trademark protection. The Foundation owns the brand and defends it, which prevents a company from forking the project and calling it the same thing. Third, infrastructure. Code hosting, continuous integration, mailing lists, bug trackers, distribution mirrors. The Foundation runs all of that. And fourth, the brand itself. Having your project under the Apache umbrella signals a certain governance quality. It says this isn't a single vendor project that might pivot next quarter.
The brand as a trust signal. That's the part that explains why companies donate in the first place.
Yes, and this is where the story gets interesting. Why would LinkedIn donate Kafka? They built it, it was solving real problems for them, they could have kept it proprietary or open-sourced it under their own banner. But they donated it to Apache in 2011. Same with Yahoo and Hadoop. Same with the Berkeley AM Plav and Spark.
Because if you keep it under your own banner, you're asking your competitors to contribute to a project that has your name on it.
Competitors won't do it. They'll assume you're going to steer the project toward your own interest, that the governance is a facade. But if you donate it to Apache, it becomes neutral ground. Suddenly, engineers from competing companies can collaborate without their legal departments having a heart attack. The project attracts a broader contributor base, which makes it more robust, which makes it more valuable, which benefits the original donor too. It's a bet that growing the pie is worth giving up control of the recipe.
And it worked. Kafka is now the backbone of real-time data infrastructure across most of the Fortune 100. LinkedIn got a healthier project than they could have built alone. The bet paid off.
It paid off spectacularly for several of these. Hadoop became the foundation of the entire big data ecosystem. Spark became the default analytics engine. And the pattern kept repeating. A company or a lab builds something useful, realizes it's infrastructure rather than a competitive differentiator, and donates it to Apache to build a community around it.
Which gets us to the knock-on effect Daniel was asking about. Apache became the default home for infrastructure software, the stuff that runs underneath everything else, invisible to end users.
And there's a reason for that. Infrastructure software is exactly the kind of thing where neutrality matters most. If you're building a streaming platform, you don't want your message queue to be owned by a competitor. If you're a bank, you don't want your data processing framework to be controlled by a company that might get acquired or change its licensing terms. Apache provides a credible commitment that the project will be governed by its community, not by a single corporate interest.
The foundation as a commitment device, it solves a coordination problem.
It does. And it solved it so effectively that we now have this strange situation where a volunteer-run nonprofit with a tiny staff is responsible for software that processes stock trades, routes airline reservations, powers Netflix recommendations, runs fraud detection at banks. The invisible plumbing of the modern economy.
Which brings us to the tension. How does that actually work sustainably?
This is where I get uncertain about the long term. The model is brilliant in some ways and terrifying in others. On the brilliant side, the projects are self-governing, so the foundation doesn't need to scale with the number of projects. Adding a 320th project doesn't require hiring more project managers. The PMC handles it. The infrastructure costs are largely donated. Cloud providers give credits. Companies donate hardware.
And on the terrifying side?
Bus factor. A lot of these projects have a handful of core maintainers who understand the code deeply. If two or three of them burn out or change jobs, the project can stall. The foundation's model doesn't prevent that, it just makes it visible. You can see, on the mailing lists, when a project is struggling. But there's no mechanism to fix it other than hoping new volunteers show up.
And they might not.
They might not. We saw this with OpenSSL after Heartbleed. A piece of infrastructure that nearly the entire internet depended on was being maintained by basically two guys, one of whom was named Steve, and they were underfunded and overworked. Apache projects aren't always that extreme, but the dynamic is similar. Critical infrastructure resting on volunteer labor.
And the foundation can't pay people even if it wanted to. Its non-profit structure and its philosophy both prevent it.
Right. The ASF doesn't employ developers. That's by design. It's part of the neutrality. If the foundation started paying some contributors and not others, it'd create all kinds of governance problems. But it means the model depends on companies being willing to let their employees spend time on Apache projects. Which they often do. Google, Microsoft, Amazon, they all have engineers who are Apache committers on company time. But that's corporate goodwill, not a structural guarantee.
So it's a kind of gift economy embedded inside a capitalist one. Companies benefit enormously from these projects, and some of them give back by paying engineers to contribute, but there's no contract requiring it. Nothing stops a company from using Kafka for free, building a billion-dollar business on it, and contributing nothing.
Nothing except reputation and self-interest. If you're heavily dependent on a project, it's in your interest to help keep it healthy. But you're right, it's not enforceable, and the asymmetry is real. The ASF's annual reports show something like hundreds of millions of dollars in donated infrastructure and volunteer hours. The value created by the projects is orders of magnitude larger.
So Daniel's bigger question, how did a volunteer-driven institution become responsible for so much invisible infrastructure, has a kind of unsettling answer. It happened because it worked. The model solved a real coordination problem so effectively that it became load-bearing before anyone really noticed.
And now we can't easily unload it. If the ASF disappeared tomorrow, there's no obvious replacement. No company could step in and say, we'll take over Kafka and Spark and Hadoop without creating exactly the trust problem the foundation was designed to solve.
A single point of failure that isn't a single point exactly. It's a distributed governance model, but the brand and the legal entity and the infrastructure all sit in one place.
The foundation itself is the single point, not the code. The code is out there, Apache licensed, anyone can fork it. But the coordination function, the neutral ground, the brand that makes competitors willing to collaborate, that's much harder to replicate.
What's the closest the foundation has come to a real crisis?
There have been projects that left, or tried to. Some communities chafe under the Apache way, the mailing list requirement, the consensus model, the slower pace. But the bigger challenge might be ahead of us. AI and cloud providers are building enormous businesses on top of Apache projects. If the value extraction keeps growing while the contribution model stays voluntary, that gap becomes harder to ignore.
And the cloud providers have been accused of exactly that, taking open source software, hosting it as a service, and not contributing back proportionally. The Elastic versus AWS fight over Elasticsearch a few years back was partly about this dynamic.
Elastic actually changed their license to try to prevent Amazon from offering it as a service without contributing back. That was a whole saga. And it raised a question that applies to Apache too. Is the permissive license model sustainable when hyperscalers can take the code and compete with the original creators?
Though Apache's model is different from Elastic's, Elastic was a single company behind the project. Apache projects are supposed to be community governed from the start. In theory, no single company can change the license on a whim.
In theory. In practice, if the three main committers on a project all work for the same company, and that company decides to pull them off the project, the community governance doesn't help much. The foundation can't force anyone to write code.
So the governance solves the trust problem, but not the sustainability problem.
It's a governance framework, not an economic model. And that distinction is what makes the whole thing feel precarious when you look at it closely.
Let's go back to the human scale for a second. You mentioned the mailing lists. That's still how Apache projects operate?
It is. And this is one of those details that sounds archaic but serves a real function. Mailing lists are public, archived, searchable, and they don't require any particular platform. You don't need a GitHub account. You don't need Slack. Anyone with email can participate, and every decision leaves a trace. In the pre-GitHub era, this was just how open source worked. You'd email a patch to the list, someone would review it, the discussion would happen in the open, and eventually a committer would apply it.
And Apache has kept that model even as the rest of the world moved to pull requests and chat platforms.
Some projects use GitHub now. The foundation has adapted. But the mailing list remains the formal record. If a decision wasn't discussed on the list, it didn't happen, in the foundation's eyes. That's the rule.
There's something almost beautiful about that stubbornness. This institution that oversees some of the most advanced distributed systems on the planet runs its governance on technology from the 1980s.
It's not just stubbornness, though. It's a deliberate choice about transparency and accessibility. Email is the lowest common denominator. It doesn't require learning a new tool. It doesn't require agreeing to terms of service. It's federated and open in a way that modern platforms aren't.
It produces this incredible historical record. Every argument, every design decision, every patch submission for 25 plus years, all archived and searchable.
Which is how we know the origin story in such detail. The first message from Brian Behlendorf proposing the Apache group. The patch discussions, the debates about incorporation, it's all still there.
Before we wrap up the main discussion, I want to name the thing that I think is most misunderstood about Apache. Most people, if they recognize the name at all, think it's a company. Or they think the foundation is this large organization with hundreds of employees directing the projects.
The reality is the opposite. The foundation is deliberately small. It's a legal shell and an infrastructure provider. The projects run themselves. The foundation's job is to stay out of the way except when legal or brand issues arise.
Which is an unusual way to run an institution. Most organizations, as they grow, add layers of management. Apache figured out how to grow by not adding layers, by making each new project self-governing from the start.
It's the difference between scaling an organization and scaling a pattern. They scaled the pattern, the Apache way, rather than scaling the organization that oversees it.
All right. Hilbert's been unusually quiet back there, which usually means he's got something.
I ran a web hosting company in the late 90s. Small operation, maybe 200 domains. All Apache HTTPD compiled from source, patched by hand.
Of course you did.
There was one night, this would have been 97, maybe early 98. I applied a patch wrong, took down every site, all 200. Middle of the night, no one else around, and I'm staring at a seg fault I don't understand.
For? What was the patch for?
Some module I barely remember. Custom logging, I think. The point is, I was stuck. So I emailed the Apache mailing list. This was back when you had to subscribe first and wait for the confirmation. I'm sitting there at 2 in the morning, Tel Aviv time, waiting.
And someone answered.
Guy in Australia. Name of Martin. Hadn't gone to bed yet. He looked at the error log I pasted, spotted the mistake in about 4 minutes, told me exactly which line to fix. I recompiled, restarted, everything came back up. Total downtime maybe 40 minutes.
A stranger on the other side of the world, middle of the night, just helped you.
I still have the email thread, printed it out at the time. It's in a folder somewhere. I pull it out every few years just to remind myself that the internet used to work like that.
You printed out an email thread from 1997 and you still have it.
It's 3 pages. Martin was thorough.
That's exactly the ethos we've been describing. The mailing list as the institution. The volunteer who just knows the answer and shares it.
The thing is, I never contributed anything back to Apache. I wasn't a developer, I just used it, and when it broke, someone I'd never met fixed it for free. I think about that now. 25 years, and I'm still in the red on that ledger.
That's a lot of people's relationship with Apache, whether they know it or not. Every time you stream a video or check a bank balance, there's probably an Apache project in the bath, and someone like Martin kept it running.
Martin's probably retired now. Or maybe he's still on the list. I should check.
The archives are still there.
They are. I looked once, found the thread. His email address doesn't bounce, far as I know.
You haven't emailed him.
What would I say? Remember that web hosting guy in Tel Aviv whose server you saved in 1997? He probably fixed 100 servers that year.
You'd be surprised. People remember.
Maybe. Anyway, that's what I had.
The misconception I want to name is the one we touched on earlier. Most people think Apache is a web server. Some know it's a foundation. Almost nobody understands that it's a governance model, a way of organizing human beings around code that has proven so durable, it now underpins a shocking amount of the digital economy.
The thing people get wrong, even when they know about the foundation, is that they assume it's large. They picture an organization with departments and managers and hundreds of employees. The reality is a tiny staff keeping the lights on while over 300 self-governing communities do the actual work. The ASF is more like a legal trust than a company.
The open question I keep coming back to is what happens as AI and cloud providers build more and more on top of Apache projects. The foundation's model solved the trust problem for the open source era. Whether it solves the value extraction problem of the AI era is a different question entirely.
The foundation's role as neutral steward might actually become more critical, not less. As companies consolidate around a few big platforms, having a credible neutral home for infrastructure software could be the thing that keeps those platforms honest.
The next time you send a message or stream a video, an Apache project is probably somewhere in the path, and a volunteer you've never met helped keep it running.
Thanks to Hilbert Flemingtop for producing, as always.
This has been My Weird Prompts. You can find us at myweirdprompts.com or email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.